The thousands of bees that died in Oregon in mid-2013 did not die in vain. The major bee kill in the Portland area brought several issues into sharper focus, including the fate of bees and other pollinators and how much we depend on them, and the use of pesticides and regulations on that use. Oregon ended up with a one-time task force on pollinator health, which recently finished its work and sent a report with recommendations to the state legislature. Today's guest works on behalf of pollinators and was one of the members of the task force. Ame Code is with the Xerces Society, and she's the pesticide program coordinator there and our guest on The Exchange. Hi, Ame. Good to have you back.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for covering this important issue.
Catch new listeners up, if you would, and explain what the Xerces Society is all about.
Well, I think the Xerces Society, we work to protect really the fundamental basics of our ecology and our environment, focusing on working on invertebrate conservation, because those bumblebees, the freshwater mussels, our beetles, all these things that we kind of take for granted really are the base for the survival of our whole planet. So that's where we focus. We focus on the small ones to protect everyone.
So the bee kill in mid-2013 was not just a die-off, it was also a wake-up, it sounds like, for a lot of people.
It was really shocking to have 50,000 bees die in a small parking lot, bumblebees. We're now doing some research into how many colonies that was. It was at least 160 colonies of bees that were likely devastated from that bee kill. And the applicators, honestly, they walked in and they read the label and they made an application that looked like it was according to the label, yet it was obviously still extremely harmful. And it's not the only one. You know, there were six other bee kills in Oregon as well as that. Pretty shocking numbers.
Now, Xerces had a lot to do with publicizing that original bee kill. I mean, to this day, are you surprised at the responses that people had and how much they responded to it?
You know, I in some ways I am, but really, bees are so fundamental. They're so important to our lives. It made sense that people responded the way they did. 50,000 bees is a huge number. Now, we're not talking honeybees, because a colony of honeybees can be huge. These are bumblebees, and they live in very small colonies of maybe 300 bees. And, you know, the fact that the base of our food chain, you know, part of the group that supports our ability to eat fruits and vegetables were just shockingly falling from trees. It made sense that people reacted. And I hope that the state follows through and really takes the steps that we need to ensure nothing like this happens again. And not only do we not have, we need to not just stop these dramatic die-offs, we also need to stop the slow death that we're seeing that so many beekeepers are speaking of as well.
Is colony collapse disorder still an issue for bees and beekeepers?
You know, I don't know that it's not so much colony collapse disorder. It's really just the numbers of bees that are surviving throughout the year is less and less. Our beekeepers, and we're also thinking that our wild bees are also on slow decline. You know, there's so many amazing native bees, and, well, I'd love to tell you a story about some of the wonderful native bees, but we can wait. I don't know what other questions you have. So.
All right. Well, one of the questions is actually about bumblebees versus honeybees. You mentioned them both so far. And for those of us who are not that biologically hip, what is the difference between them?
Well, there's a lot of difference. So honeybees are managed. They're from Europe, so they're not a native species. There's not very much diversity in the number of honeybees that we have. And they have one queen, and they can have up to 50,000 bees in a colony. So you've got worker bees, and they have all these wonderful different jobs within the colony, and they're very efficient at those jobs. Bumblebees have much smaller colonies. In fact, at the beginning of the season, and they don't maintain those colonies over the winter. The queens will go off on their own in the winter, then the spring they start up a new colony. And their colonies are at most 300 bees, really different than 50,000 bees, and a lot less cushion in the fact that, like, if a worker honeybee goes out, is poisoned by a pesticide and dies, you've got a queen that's safe. Bumblebees don't have as much cushion. They don't have as many workers. And solitary bees, even less so. So there's many, many solitary bees that live on their own, and the female will provision her own nest and her own young on all by herself.
We were talking about bees and other pollinators and efforts to protect them in Oregon and elsewhere. The Pollinator Task Force recently reported to the Oregon Legislature. Ame Code with the Xerces Society is our guest and was a member of that task force. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about the issues facing bees and other pollinators and potential legislation to protect them. 800-838-3760. 800-838-3760. Anywhere in our listening area. Send emails if you'd like to jx@jeffnet.org. So talk about the process, if you would, Ame, of creating the task force and what the pieces were coming together.
Well, you know, basically, it really in response to that bee kill in Wilsonville, one of our state representatives really wanted to make a difference, and that's Representative Reardon out of the Portland area. And so he brought together stakeholders, so people that either wanted to protect pollinators or who might be impacted by any changes to better protect pollinators. So pesticide industry representatives, people who represented retailers that sold pesticides or used pesticides regularly. And so instead of it being a group of scientists talking through what's the problem, what are the possible solutions, it was a group of people saying, you know, what can we do in this state and what are we willing to do, which is a really different process. But we had a lot of good conversations. I feel like there was a lot of information that was shared. People were much more aware. We sat down. We had 7 meetings. The first couple meetings were really background. You know, what are these pesticides? What are our pollinators? And then, you know, what steps? What's already happening in other states? What's happening federally? What can we do in Oregon? And we came up with some good ideas. But when it came to the hard questions about can we actually make changes to what we're comfortable with, there was really a hesitancy on the part of people to make changes to protect our pollinators. And that was disappointing to me, although I'm still excited by some of the ideas that did come forth.
Now, I noticed there were 8 members of the task force, 8 voting members, and then you had 2 non-voting members, State Senator Chuck Thompson and State Representative Jeff Reardon, who you mentioned already helped put this together. Both of the legislators functioned as non-voting members. Was there general consensus on a lot of issues? And if so, what were the ones that were the ones that seemed to sail through? Where is the stuff where you got hung up?
Yeah. You know, I think everyone recognizes that we want to get education out there. We want to inform the public what can they do. You know, I want to share with people what kind of plants they can plant right now to make their yard more pollinator friendly, because that's so important. Our bees and other pollinators are lacking in so much of the forage and the food that they need to survive. So, you know, people wanted to get out there and get information out to the public. Everyone agreed on that. People also want to make sure that they know, well, if you're picking up a chemical to kill aphids on your roses or, you know, to manage whatever problem in your yard, you need to really think about that and consider the possible impact to a pollinator and how you use it and if you use it to really be a thoughtful process. It shouldn't just be a tool. Oh, I don't like these aphids. You know, you really need to think through the use of these pesticides. So we did agree on that. We agreed that we would love to have Oregon be a leader in research on bee health. We've got some amazing scientists here in this state. Oregon State University has some great researchers, and we want to help them to expand their work. We all agreed on that.
Dr. Ramesh Sagil, in fact, was the task force chair and is an assistant professor in this field at Oregon State University, right?
Absolutely, and he was a wonderful and informed member of the task force. Very cautious and strategic. I very much appreciated, and his knowledge about our honeybees was extensive.
And so, so where were some of the holdups? Where were some of the areas where you couldn't get agreement among the members of the task force? And in that situation, what then happens? Do you present a recommendation with reports of dissent or something, or how did that all work?
Well, it's not so the areas where there was disagreement are not surprising. I think we walked into this process knowing that there might be disagreement, but with hopes that possibly people would be willing to make change. It was on, you know, basic sets of regulation. Honestly, things like we learned as a task force that most of the neonicotinoid insecticides, which are the ones that cause the bee death in Wilsonville, they're what's termed general use. And so that allows people at a nursery who are employed to be managing their plants, they can be using these insecticides without a license. Same thing on a farm. If you're working at that farm under, you don't need to have a license, nor do you even need someone up above you, your boss, to have a pesticide applicator license. We felt, and that's really the way our state informs people about pesticides, informs the applicators. So we brought to the table, a few of us brought to the table the idea that we should expand the set of people that receive a pesticide applicator license to these folks that on a regular basis are using these products as part of their work. Absolute dissent. And I was surprised. I felt like it's actually a pretty small fee to become a licensed applicator, and your employees would be, better informed. But we could not get agreement on something like that.
Ame Cote is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Again, she's with the Xerces Society based in the Portland area, the pesticide program coordinator and a member of the Pollinator Task Force that recently completed its work. It was the Task Force on Pollinator Health. 8 voting members and 2 legislators as non-voting members sent their report off to the state legislature. We're getting into the bottom of what was sent off there. Join us on the exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760 to talk about bees, pollinators, and their overall health. Or you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Pam and Dexter is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ame Cote.
Hi, well, this is a great program, and I think it's so important that we understand how the pollinators are being threatened, including the butterflies. And but I wanted to just reiterate, I've said this a couple times on the show, but a lot of the plants, 50% of the plants you buy in the stores, the big box stores, have the neonicotinoid pesticides in the plants themselves. So it's really important if you want to get plants to help the pollinators to make sure that they don't have them. And when the garden supply person doesn't know, if you buy an organic plant, that means it doesn't have any pesticides in them. And then Cosmic Pizza, Healthy Bees Equal Healthy Gardens, is having an event December 13th in Eugene, kind of to raise awareness and educate people and also raise funds to help get the word out for our pollinators and mostly our bees.
And Pam, when you say the decorative plants have neonicotinoids in them, is it genetically in there, or are they just sprayed on there?
Yeah, they're put in there. They're in the soil, and it's endemic. It goes through the whole plant. So a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to go to the store and get some great flowering plants to help the bees, and they don't realize that they're actually hurting the bees because the bees are attracted to these plants, and if they have the neonicotinoids in them, then it actually hurts the plants. So that is just so important for people to understand. And I, thought I was up on the issue, and I found out a couple years ago when I was working with the Sustainable Oregon Sustainable Beekeepers. And so maybe your guests can talk a little bit about that.
All right. Thanks for that. Good to hear from you, Pam. Ami?
No, Pam is absolutely right. These are extremely long-lived chemicals. You put them in the soil, they're uptaken by a plant, they could be there years later, some of our studies have shown. Not Xerces, but some of the research that is out there. And because they're these general use chemicals, nurseries can use them. They also don't have acute health risks to workers. We don't find these immediate risks. I think they're used pretty commonly. And there was a study by Friends of the Earth, which is what Pam was referring to. And in the big box stores that they went to, 50% of the plants had these neonicotinoids. These are long-lived. They're highly toxic to pollinators, especially to our bees. They have immediate risks, as we saw in Wilsonville after an application where bees are dying. They also have all kinds of subtle but extremely detrimental effects that can be caused by them. They showed that bees no longer avoided predators after very low doses. So they would fly up to a flower that had a hornet on it. There's other studies that show that we actually have fewer queens produced after they've been exposed to neonicotinoids. They collect less pollen. You collect less pollen, you have less food, you struggle. And really amazing and insidious impacts these chemicals can have.
And they're called neonicotinoids because they are similar to nicotine-based substances?
They're a synthetic or a version of nicotine. Yes, they do. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So and nicotine, obviously, we're aware of its poisonous effects on humans for sure. Let's go to Ken in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ame Code, one of the members of the Pollinator Task Force.
Hi. I'm concerned about these yellow jacket traps that they sell in all the stores that trap the yellow jackets. They pollinate too.
All right.
You know, I love it. Someone's out there speaking for the yellow jackets. You know, it's true. Yellow jackets have amazing value in the ecosystem. They're not something that are necessary. They also can be a nuisance. And it's an interesting, and it's great to have. We don't want to get rid of all of our yellow jackets. I also used to work with schools, and people are trying to figure out how can we have our kids playing out in the schoolyard when we've got yellow jackets out there. It's a delicate balance trying to figure out how to live with different some of the few insects that are out there that can also be nuisances. But yes, I keep my yellow jackets around too. Thank you.
Ame Code, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with the Xerces Society, where she's the Pesticide Program Coordinator, and she was a member of the Task Force on Pollinator Health, which recently completed its work and sent a report off to the legislature. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about bees and yellow jackets and butterflies and all the realm of pollinators and what will come out of this package of recommendations to the legislature. 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Ame, what were the recommendations that did emerge? I mean, what was sent to the legislature, and were they directed at changes in laws, or were they directed at regulatory changes that might result in differences in rules but no new laws?
The set of regulations really was across the board. You know, a couple I want to highlight. We talked a little bit about the desire for more education and research. You know, one of your callers earlier, Pam, mentioned the fact that we have pesticides that move through after an application can stay in a plant. One of the things that we wanted, that the majority of task force members had support for, was getting information out to the public, putting information on those plants so they know what has or has not been treated with a neonicotinoid. This is something that's happening in Minnesota. Even some of our big box stores are on their own trying to get more information out to people about what plants have been treated with neonicotinoids, but we could not get agreement on the consensus from the task force. But it is a split opinion recommendation that is moving to the legislature. We could work to have greater public information out there about what's being used on the plants that we're buying for our yard.
By the time this next session of the legislature is done, it will have been 2 years since the big bee die-off in Wilsonville. I mean, in that time, has there been any changes in procedure, in application of procedure, in law that would prevent something like what happened in Wilsonville from happening again?
The State Department of Agriculture I'm really glad you brought this up because there's so much to this. The State Department of Agriculture has taken some preliminary steps and some valuable steps to stop some of the uses that were linked to the bee die-off in Wilsonville and the six others that we've had around the state. Two of the neonicotinoids that are long-lived and highly toxic that were linked with bee die-offs can no longer be used on a type of tree, the linden tree, which is the tree that seemed to have most of these incidents associated with it. Those linden trees are also, the treatments were all over cement, so you could really see when the bees dropped. If it's over a field of grass, you really don't see those bees that have dropped. But I think we can go further. So they took the initial steps, and I hope that they continue that rule here in Oregon, that those two chemicals can't be used on linden trees. There are other neonicotinoids with the same risk profile that still can be used on linden trees and that can be used systemically. So I think we need to go a little further, and we need to figure out how to avoid those, because we very likely will see incidents again if those that continue to be used.
So I'm curious to know how comprehensive a list of recommendations you made to the legislature. Was this a handful? Was it a few dozen? Was it several hundred?
Oh, gosh, I never counted. Let's see. There were probably about 30. We broke them into different categories. There were best management practices, outreach and education, pesticide regulation, research, and funding. And so we looked at different areas. We came up with some great ideas. We want more of our state lands to be pollinator friendly. We want there to be forage and habitat for our native bees. I don't know if you know this, but some of the research that Xerces has been involved with has shown that about a third of North America's bumblebees are at risk of extinction. One third. These are amazing bees. People love to watch them. I mean, you know, they're almost as fun to watch as a panda bear. Not call it a panda bear anymore, though.
Just a panda, so, giant panda, right?
Yeah, just a panda. But I grew up with panda bears, what can I say, mm-hmm. Showing my age.
Obviously you have, it would seem like two voices in the legislature who are going to carry this work forward, Senator Chuck Thompson and State Representative Jeff Reardon, who were non-voting members of the task force. So are they have these in hand and are ready to take them back to their caucuses, I'm thinking.
You know, I think there is going to be the impression I got was that they're going to be interested in some of the consensus items. And I hope that we can expand the conversation and look at some of the more difficult issues and really roll up our sleeves and take a hard look and do what we need to do. These are chemicals. These pesticides are long-lived and highly toxic to our pollinators.
And it is something we'll be talking about, I'm sure, down the road as well. The package goes to the legislature. The legislature begins meeting in late January and early February in the state of Oregon for its regular budgetary session, which is the big deal session for any grouping of the Oregon legislature. Ame Code was on that task force on pollinator health and is with the Xerces Society as pesticide program coordinator. Ame, thanks again for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
You have a good day.
You too. And that'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. We'll talk about an archaeological dig in Southern Oregon coming up.